The Pharisees and the scribes are at it again. They apparently have nothing better to do than question the company that Jesus has been keeping. The tax collectors and sinners are coming to learn from Jesus, to hear what he has to say. They know they are in need, and they believe that perhaps this Jesus can share something with them that will change their lives. The Pharisees and scribes are blind to the possibility that something positive might come out of having folks hear the news that Jesus has to share. They are tax collectors and sinners, for God's sakes. They can't change. Tigers don't change their stripes. Why waste your time trying to teach those thick-headed, wrong living sorts? They are not our kind. And you, Jesus, you claim to be one of our kind and have no business hanging around with them, much less eating with them. They might rub off on you. Their sinfulness might ooze off them and spread onto you. The possibility that it might actually be the other way around, that Jesus' goodness might rub off on the sinners and tax collectors, never entered the minds of the Pharisees or scribes. It certainly wasn't happening to them, it seems. Jesus' goodness wasn't rubbing off on them. But they weren't listening to Jesus, hoping to be changed. They were looking to find fault. Jesus, knowing that a direct rebuke would probably not have much success, tells them a parable, a story that seems fairly innocuous on the most basic level, but requires more thought and further inspection, and can bounce around in your head for days, maybe even years, revealing deeper and different levels of understanding. This time the parable wasn't about a vine, or a vineyard, or a steward, or a landowner. It was actually two parables in one, the first about a lost sheep, and the second a lost coin. They're very similar, yet quite different. Which of you, Jesus says, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? We might expect an extroverted logistician to be in the midst of the group and quickly raise his hand, assured that this is a trick question, and retort, "I wouldn't. It makes no logical sense to leave 99 sheep in Hazard's Way with no shepherd to assure that they are safe, while the shepherd goes off to unknown parts for goodness knows how long to find one sheep. Better to cut your losses." And if that person did appear and make such a statement, Luke chose not to record it. Perhaps Luke allowed this person to save face throughout history, or perhaps this was omitted because it actually never really happened. Or because that is not the point. This parable is not a logic quiz. Actually, it's not about logic at all. It's fairly illogical, if truth be told. God doesn't work by our rules of logic. What woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? Well, maybe we do that. It really depends on how much one silver coin is worth. If the silver market is really low that day, we might not waste our valuable time trying to find one lost coin. Or we might decide that it'll turn up at some point and that will be a good day. It'd be a nice surprise to finally find that coin that had been hiding for so long. It really just depends on the value of what you've lost, the circumstances of the loss, and all sorts of other variables that may or may not be controlled when we decide how much searching needs to be done. And furthermore, do we consider something lost or merely misplaced? Lost sounds so permanent, so unredeemable. I tend to lose my office keys very often. I don't actually lose them. I put them down somewhere and can't for the life of me remember where it was that I put them down. I don't tend to get too panicky about it, because more often than not, there's someone around that has a key that can let me into any door I need to go through. But that really isn't loss, is it? The notion of something being lost, really lost, gone forever, never to be in one's presence again, is joined by a sense of panic, heart racing, sweaty palmed panic. I can't really imagine experiencing that over a lost coin. But maybe if it was a valuable coin that had been passed down for several generations and entrusted to my care, I might be a bit distraught if I thought I had lost it. That wouldn't really be about the coin. It would be about my reputation as a responsible person. Don't give Lee anything of any value. You know what she did with great-grandfather Franklin's coin. Sheep, on the other hand, that's something I can relate to a little better. I have a beautiful photograph by David Cummings entitled Little Lost Sheep. Pictured in the black and white photograph is a small white lamb, totally surrounded by what seems to be miles and miles of mountain ranges and nothing else. Lamb doesn't look particularly concerned about being alone, although I'm not sure how a lamb would look if he were concerned about being alone. But the image gives a sense of both loneliness and hope at the same time. This particular photograph was a gift that was given with the prophetic line, "This has good sermon potential." And it was so. But a more piercing image of loss is still fresh in my mind. When Tom and I returned from the beach earlier this week, our house was empty. Noticeably empty. Our self-assured, spoiled, rotten, last animal standing 4-year-old black cat was nowhere to be seen or even heard. Several hours passed, and still no room kitty. We called his name. We opened cans of cat food. We looked out into the woods. We paced. And finally went to bed thinking that at some point in the middle of that night, the familiar pounce would happen, followed by the cheek tapping command of a 3 a.m. petting. But it didn't happen. After 24 hours of catless living, I was frantic and scared and sad. Earlier this year, we had lost a cat to a coyote. What could possibly guarantee that it wouldn't happen again? And then when Tom saw a coyote boldly walking down the street in front of our house, we were certain that Brew was lost forever. Unlike the shepherd in our parable and the woman who had lost her coin, we didn't go out and scour the woods. We sat and waited and played out scenarios and wallowed in our sadness, or at least I did. But about 30 minutes after the coyote sighting, the copycat appeared, apparently having decided that he had punished us enough for leaving him. He sauntered up, tail straight in the air, and announced his presence. In a way that would have caused a less tormented person to burst into waves of laughter. He wasn't lost. He knew where he was all along. We leapt to the wrong conclusion. Knowing what is lost or who is lost can be difficult. Even more difficult is going out and searching for the lost one and bringing them back rather than just writing them off as lost. End of story. No hope. No future. The Pharisees and scribes did that. They wrote off the tax collectors and sinners. They decided on their own that these folks were lost without hope of return, and that was that. Let them be, they thought. Better yet, stay away from them. They're lost. There is no hope. These days, we seem so often ready to determine who the lost are. We are so quick to judge who is without hope. The key words we use are most often not lost or hopeless. Word we use most often is wrong. But what that boils down to, really, is different. Are those who don't think like me? Are those who don't agree with me? In the past months, and certainly in the past week, we have witnessed an escalation of finger-pointing and naming wrong or lost. Yesterday was the 9th anniversary of the event we now refer to merely as 9/11, the day that shook our nation in ways that it had not been shaken in many years, if ever. There's a plan to build a mosque near the site of that horrible terrorist act played out by some very extremist people. On the other end of that extreme, but no less extreme, is a shepherd of a small flock in Gainesville, Florida, who drew international attention and caused international upheaval with his public plans to burn the sacred book of the Islamic faith. Who's lost? And is there no hope? In the two parables that Jesus told, the lamb was lost and the coin was lost. Neither did anything on their own to be found. Perhaps we could surmise that the lamb was bleeding like crazy, hoping someone would find her, but certainly the coin had no way to draw attention to itself. It was not about the one that was lost. It was about the one that was looking, hoping beyond hope that the lost would be found and returned to the one who was desperately searching them out. Lost seems to imply a permanent situation. Lost sounds like forever, never to be returned, never to be redeemed. A better word, at least in terms of the way God deals with us, is misplaced. Lost sounds like a term we would use to refer to someone that we have written off, one for whom we have determined there is no hope. You can envision that person in your mind right now. There are those that we hold out no hope. Those that we would never seek out because we, determining ourselves to have the mind of God, know with our own certainty that they are beyond redeeming. look like if we were a little more God-like, a little more Christ-like, and a little less Pharisaic? What could happen if we did a little less judging of the lost and a lot more searching to find? Amen.